Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the Move Podcast, talking about the 2023 Milan San Remo La Primavera. As far as I'm concerned, this is the cycling season started today. We can do all these other races in the Middle East and Catalonia. The season, as far as I'm concerned, started today, and we're going to get all into it. I am joined over there in Greenville. George just constantly giving us Greenville intel. We got a bunch of intel today in the members only pre-show. It's just good. Anyways, Mr. George Hincapie wearing the, I think we both sort of went to our WeDo drawer and like, which t-shirt should we wear? And after the performance we saw today from Matthew Vanderpool, you know, there was only one, and that's the C in the douches T. Like, I mean, this was like a C in the douches poster child moment. Right. Also up there in Madrid, Johan Bruneel. Which, by the way, folks, speaking of members only, our members only sports betting show called Outcomes. Now, even if you're not even into cycling, you just want to, you want a little action. The man right there in Madrid can pick them, right? That was your pick, Matthew Vanderpool. That, which is.
Johan, did you throw any paper down on your pick?
I did not.
Oh, okay. This is, there's some things we just shouldn't say on the show, but it's either no comment or yes. And over there in ATX, JB Hager.
Last couple of days of South by Southwest here in ATX.
And that explains why you were late to the show.
No.
What did you tell me last week when I was at South by? I had two nights in a row, actually two mornings in a row until 4 a.m. And I told JB, and he's like, yeah, I just tell people if you're coming for South by, get a baboon liver. Put in your baboon liver and be prepared to hibernate for a week after, which is what I have been doing.
Yeah, it takes a lot out of you.
God, I haven't been to that many. All right, we're going to get to all the action. We're obviously an exceptional performance from Matthew Vanderpool, a guy we were just talking about a matter of weeks ago, questioning him. Questioning his team, questioning what was wrong, just goes to show 6.5 hours later, 295 kilometers later, the questions are over. The kid is back. Today's show brought to you by Element. This is our go-to hydration source, 1,000 milligrams of sodium, 200 milligrams of potassium, 60 milligrams of magnesium, no sugar, no gluten, no artificial ingredients, no BS. It is the real deal. We hear about it from you listeners all the time, folks that have converted to Element. And the stories we hear all the time just about how much you're loving it is awesome. Special offer for our listeners. Head on over to drinklmnt.com/themove. You get a free sample pack that gives you one of every flavor, citrus, raspberry, orange, and unflavored. You can figure out which ones you like the best. Again, head on over to drinklmnt.com/themove. Also today brought to you by Athletic Greens. I know I was up early. I will say this. I got my, I got my timeline off. I set my alarm for 6 because you guys were telling me that this was when it was going to be about 2 hours to go. I got up and there was 100 miles to go, 160 kilometers to go. And I had already had like 3 sips of coffee and I was like, oh God, I think I'm pregnant on this deal. And nonetheless, I went back to bed for 2 hours, got up with 80K to go. But when I got up after I had my coffee, like I do every day, every morning, hammered the Athletic Greens, AG1. It is, don't take it from me. I mean, all the smart guys, Andrew Huberman, Dr. Peter Attia, they will all tell you, if you're going to do one thing, it is Athletic Greens. 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source, superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens, all for less than $3 a day. Make it real simple. It's about taking control of your health. It has been a game changer for everybody, I think, on this show. Let's make it simple. Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1 year supply of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you got to do is head on over to athleticgreens.com/themove. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/themove. All right, let's get into it. I mean, kids, if you're at home wondering what's like a cool way to win a bike race, just go watch what happened today. Like that is the way you win any bike race, especially a classic like Milan San Remo. Matthew Vanderpool, like we said a second ago, that was just seeing the douches. And you could tell, and I want to hear your thoughts, Johan, you could tell that he felt good. And he said in the post-race interview that he had not been feeling good. Mm-hmm. He talked about his legs at Tirreno. We talked about that. But you could tell in the race, boy, he was first over the Chipressa, had a gap on the downhill, even looked ahead, had a teammate with him, even looked around and thought, should we go now? I was like, wow, somebody's feeling good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he said, you know, and we've seen in Tirreno that he was obviously not the best Mathieu van der Poel we've seen, but I also think that he's been hiding a little bit. You know, yesterday in Outcomes, when I was talking with Spencer, I said, you know what, Mathieu van der Poel, man, he's a racer. And that week in between Tirreno and Milan-San Remo, those guys need that stuff just to relax a little bit, you know, just assimilate the efforts they've done during the whole Tirreno. And I think he rode the perfect race. He was, you know, he was on Van Aert's wheel on the Poggio. I think, you know, Pogacar, that effort he did, he had to go early and he had to go long, but, you know, to drop that kind of riders like Van der Poel and Van Aert and even Filippo Ganna, it's not steep enough, you know? But that acceleration at in the last 400 meters of the Poggio, that was incredible. Nobody had a response. And when I saw actually that first corner, like on the top, you could see already there he was going to win. He went, his speed was so much faster than Pogacar, who came basically, 20, 25 meters behind? I said, game over.
Yeah, over the top, it was 2 or 3 seconds. Then he extended it to, as I kept counting, they didn't have the real-time gap, but I had it at right around 4 or 5 seconds the whole way down. Even then you're thinking, that's probably enough. Ends up winning by 15. JB, I know you were curious as to sort of what the thinking or the dynamic would have been with those three guys behind, all who are big champions and certainly wanted to win. By the way, before I asked George his thoughts, Mathieu van der Poel, only 8 race days before Milan-San Remo. So whether or not he's bluffing, he didn't have a whole lot of days to bluff. He, you know, clearly was working hard in training, but, thoughts on the race. And then also just, you know, the race itself, you know, I did a few San Remos and I almost use it just as a long training ride. I knew I was never going to be special for that race, but you obviously had it on your radar many, many times.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the most beautiful races on the calendar. I mean, when you come down to that coast near Genoa and you see on the helicopter shots today how pretty that coastline is, you know it quite well from living in Nice for that many years. But it was always, for me, it was kind of a race of like 3 different stages where you do the morning sort of start in Milan, which, by the way, we all know they didn't start in Milan this year, but it's kind of like the Italian cyclist fashion show where you're starting by the Duomo and all the Italians got their hair slicked up. And when Mark Cavendish won, I always tell the story about him putting the fake tanning on his legs before he won in 2009. I mean, it's sort of like the who's who of cool cyclists to be at the start in Milan. It doesn't get any better than that. Then, of course, you do the 15K, like neutral zone. Everybody's still waking up, got to cross all the tram lines. Didn't have to do that this year. Sometimes people crash there. Apparently Pogacar crashed in the neutral today, clearly he was fine. But that first part, you know, there's going to be a breakaway. You know, it's going to be the smaller teams that need to be on TV. Pretty much a very important breakaway for the final outcome, but there's going to be a breakaway that goes. So the first 50K is kind of fast attacks. You settle in and just your body just goes through so many different phases where once the breakaway goes, all you're thinking about is eating and saving energy. And then you hit the Turchino, which is a 3 or 4K climb, but it gets a little bit stressful there. As we saw today, Alaphilippe crashed. His teammate just left him in the dust. Alaphilippe had to come through the cars. It's kind of exciting to watch him go through the cars, but then you hit the coast road. And it's just from there on, with about 150 kilometers to go, it gets slowly faster and faster and more stressful and more windy and more road furniture. And you just saw it as the kilometers ticked away. There was crashes on the right side, the left side, people just running into poles. And the stress just gets more and more and more till you finally hit the Capoverde where you kind of know where your legs are at. Before that, I never knew how my legs were because everybody's getting tired. The pain is not, you know, the typical classic pain where it's just short bursts of speed. It's just this dull pain that just gets more and more tired. And it's just with 40K to go, you see, all right, I got the legs to be up here in the front or not.
You know, you brought up, I want to have a little fun with, and you're right about all that. A couple things stand out to me. And just for the audience at home, who most of us ride, the way you say that, George says, when you finally hit the coast and you got 150K to go, think about that. You're happy. We're on the coast. We only got 100 miles to go. And there's all these other nerves and reactions and stuff that are going to happen. It is, I think, for the average person, think about it. It's crazy. And to put it in perspective, of course, as another thing you said, George, we had, Milan San Remo is almost an automatic breakaway at the beginning, whether it's 5 to 12 guys. You had about, we had 8 or 9 riders up there, nine riders. So most of these riders, are not household names. So you just see these guys like, who are these guys? Well, so for the audience, I want to have a little fun with this, right? That breakaway was out there for 264 kilometers. So that's, for those folks who think in miles, that's 160 miles. Their average speed from the minute they went until the minute they got caught was 45 kilometers an hour, which is 28 miles an hour. So all you folks at home, go find 8 of your friends, and y'all are all think you're fancy and you train all the time. Go find 8 buddies and go ride for 160 miles at 28 miles an hour. It's crazy, right? I mean, mad respect for guys that, again, you look at the screen, you're like, who are these guys? It is really hard to do.
And they're working together and concentrating that whole time too. Yeah. It's not like you're getting pulled along.
160 miles at 28 miles an hour.
One of the big differences I see with, modern cycling is that, normally back in the days, there was always this breakaway. Nobody cares. And they gave it sometimes in like 7, 8, 10 minutes. Today, 3 minutes. That's right. It. Everything was controlled. These guys. So the peloton also went 44 and a half, 45 kilometers per hour. And that obviously adds to the fatigue when you get to the Cipressa.
It is the one race where you get just sucked along and it's not like that acute pain where you're like, this climbing is just like slowly just builds up. But I did want to point up the Cipressa and the Poggio, while we've said many times, not that difficult to climb, but are really the only two climbs in the whole pro peloton where you actually need to fight for position the whole way up, because in the Cipressa, there's 40, 50, 60 guys. If you give up 5 spots, you could maybe not make it on the descent of the Cipressa. Same thing with the Poggio. We saw today, the corners, every corner of the Poggio, it's like sprinting out of a U-turn corner and a Criterium. I mean, they're sprinting full gas. So if you're 4, 5, 6, 8 guys behind, like we saw today with Wout van Aert, he was about 8th wheel. And he really struggled to close that gap. I mean, he left it out of a bike and a half length behind Ganna. And just that little effort, once he finally was able to close it, that's when MVP made the move, because he got lucky and was able to sit on that wheel. And just, it sounds like he had that plan the whole time. He wanted to attack over the Poggio. He had the confidence in his legs. But I mean, it was a really exciting race. And what better four guys to have in a final of the first classic of the year? Super exciting.
Second fastest Milan San Remo in history.
Yeah.
And I'm curious.
The fastest one was in.
Yeah. I'm curious. I mean, you would think these years as equipment evolves and as this whole 170 plus peloton just gets as a whole, just gets better and better. You would think they'd break the record every year.
Yeah. 1990.
Wow. I mean, that must be, we know how this race goes. There are some years. Like that first half is the wind is.
Wait, which 1990 or like in the 90s?
No, 1990.
Jeez.
Take a guess who won.
Giappucci.
No.
No. Okay, I give up.
Giorgio Furlan. From Gebis. Yeah.
In your era, Lance and George, was this more of a bunch sprint? Or a small bunch, because Spencer brought it up on outcomes, how it's become more of a breakaway, like, when it's going to go down. But historically, this was a sprinter's opportunity, and that's kind of gone away. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, they were 50-50.
Yeah, I would say 50-50.
We had the Jalabert, Fondrias, had amazing
Bertini
individuals that just, they were so much better than anybody else. But one thing I also want to point out is the years that I did, from my experience, the years that I did do it, I mean, of course, all I cared about was one bike race in July, but I was still, this is now March. I had plenty of miles under my belt. I had plenty of race days. And I always remember getting on the Cipressa. And again, if we just, anybody listening and just goes and rides it, you're like, this is what's selecting the, or making the difference in the race. I would get on the Cipressa And I just start, I find myself just slipping back. I'm like, what is going, like, I couldn't understand how, if I'm expected to, you know, go up Von Two faster than anybody in July, what the fuck am, how am I actually getting, like, drifting back in the Peloton? Are they holding onto a car up there or something? Like, it's just a whole nother, it is a whole nother beast.
Yeah. Your legs are numb. You know, it's one of those races. I mean, I think it's the only race, basically. And that's like you said, George, I think it's the Capo Berta. That's the last one of the three. No?
You have yes, Capo 40, Mele, 40
Capo Cervo, Capo Berta. No?
Yeah.
The last one, there you start to feel it. But until then, I think there's like 30, 40 guys that say, hey, I'm feeling great. You know, I'm gonna go on the Cipressa. Then you turn, you have that first kilometer where this year it was a bit different also. I think everybody was expecting Yoyi to go straight from the bottom to make it hard on the Cipressa. I think they waited because they got out of position. Yeah. They did it later. But yeah, I mean, in normally, if for any very well-trained cycle tourist, those climbs are not hard.
Well, they
are very hard though after that distance.
You're right, Johan. I was expecting them to go right from the bottom, but I think the fact that they got sort of out of position a bit near the bottom was really inconsequential because it seemed to be more of a headwind. And even though they were going as hard as they can possibly go, there was still 50, 60 guys at the top. Yeah. And you saw just as always that one little real narrow part of the top of the climb where you can, if the people was on the wheels were not having that hard of a time, they can just sprint past them. Like we saw Vanderpool just go right by them, like no problem. Just to stay in the front, stay out of trouble and keep it safe.
Yeah. JB, I want to, I know you want to, and I think this would be a super fascinating thing to talk about, just this, you know, the dynamic between three. I mean, if you have obviously an exceptional Vanderpool, but those three guys behind, I mean, on paper, you're going, all right, they're going to get organized. They're going to bring him, or, you know, bring him back. But I want to get into just what would is going through the minds of those three behind. But before we do, today's show brought to you by Ventum as well. Now, gee, this is special. You and me are back riding the same bikes.
I know, man. I'm excited.
I got the man converted.
You got
every
him,
year.
Got
I'm like, converted. Man, we spend our whole lives riding the same bike. What are we? Well, except for a couple of those years, but we don't want to talk about those. But how's it been? How's the jump to Ventum?
I love it. I did a gravel race with my son last weekend on the GS1, and what a great fun ride. I mean, it's just really handles the dirt really well. Super compliant, yet very stiff, like stiff enough to where you feel the bike move when you need it to move.
Yeah, I get a lot of questions about both of my NS1 and my GS1. The GS1 is just you want a rocket ship of a gravel bike, don't look any further.
I'm excited to take that NS1 on the cobbles in Flanders, which Johan and I will talk about later.
Well, exactly. We're going to talk about it right now. So we have Ventum is offering a special giveaway. So George, you're taking a crew of folks over to the Tour Flanders. It's going to be you and Liz and Johan. You've got all the, you know, special VIP treatment that you guys always get. I don't know anything about that stuff, but you guys are going to be totally taken care of. We got a whole, I guess, from what you told me a minute ago, the damn thing sold out in like half a second. We got a waiting list. But Ventum will be there in full force. They're also giving away a nice little package here. Sign up, go over to wedo.team, click the Flanders giveaway tab. Takes 1 minute. The last day to enter is April the 2nd. Everybody who signs up, in the drawing for a Ventum NS1, you're also eligible for prizes from Roca, Element, Fidlock, Manscaped, Montcush, The Feed, and Huckberry. All you got to do is head on over to ventumracing.com/themove. Use the code WEDO, W-E-D-O. Hello, I'm the one who invented the brand. WEDU at ventumracing.com/themove. That gets you 10% off. And you hit me up the other day about the Flanders thing. And you're right. George was like, y'all weren't on this text, but he's like, you should come. And I agree. Now it's, and I would be there, but it's our spring break. But I told George, you know, next year we are moving back to Austin. So our spring break will shift and I'll be there, but you guys are going to have fun.
Quick love to Ventum too. D and his team for, taking care of Operation Get Out. We've got a bunch of people training for George's ride in Chattanooga. Using bikes for mental health, getting people outside.
Well, I mean, that's awesome. It's proven. George, Chattanooga, is that a, When is
May,
that?
May
4th. Dude, I'm just fucking with you. It's on my
Are you coming?
I'm be there, bro.
What? You haven't told me that. You said
you
something
told like me I had to. No, you told me I had to go. It's on my calendar. I will screenshot it.
You said something like I had to. I had to organize my sock drawer or something when I asked you to go. I thought I remember you saying that. But that's great. I'm excited you're coming. Because we will probably do a surf event before the race with Operation Get Out.
Well, it's right there on the water. That Chattanooga is a cool place. Yeah. JB, just one show note. We might have to edit this if I just hang up and decide not to go. Last one of the day. Today's show also brought to you by HVMN. We talk about it all the time. This is the go-to ketone for this Peloton and certainly for this show. It is a game changer, whether you're looking for recovery or performance or mental clarity, right? This is the crazy thing for me. And I know, JB, you've touched on this a lot and are a firm believer, whether we call it COVID brain or just, you know, a hangover from South by Southwest, ketone IQ and HVMN have changed the game. It actually crosses the blood-brain barrier, which is very hard to do for all you people that know about those things. Again, 60% of the Peloton is using it. Total game changer. Head on over to hvmn.com. Use the promo code THEMOVE. That gets you 20% off. hvmn.com. Promo code the move. All right, let's talk about these three chasers because I think it's that was sort of to me that's like the second biggest story of the day. Obviously, Vanderpool is on the Mount Rushmore of San Remo's after today. But yeah, I mean, look, they were 4 or 5 seconds on the downhill. They were 4 or 5 seconds at the bottom. You saw them working, right? But
so when Vanderpool goes, break down how much of that is mental or physical, because you've got, you know, Gunn is the best pursuit guy out there, probably, you know, right? Time trial.
Probably not the best descender, though.
I did not know that about him. You would think he had just sort of crazy descending skills from years on the track and all the technical parts of that. But they kept talking about it on the GCN coverage that he self-admits that he is not a good descender. So to your question, JB, yes, it's a mental blow. You're like, okay, this guy just got shot out of a cannon, but we got to get downhill down the Poggio, the backside of the Poggio safely. First of all, it's a very dangerous downhill. You can bite off more than you can chew real quick. So that's sort of first thing, but they still got to the bottom with that gap, 4 or 5 seconds, maybe
a little
six.
More, I think little more. Yeah. 6-7 seconds. Yeah.
But look at the engines, right? You got Wout van Aert, you got Filippo Ganna. And you've got Tadej Pogacar. So I don't know, if we were just doing a time trial and you said, okay, Vanderpool, you're on your own and these guys are going to do a team time trial, we know what happens, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, the mental side and the tactical side sets in and none of those guys really want to end up all back together. They know that, you know, somebody's not winning, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, aren't winning and it's hard to commit.
Yeah. In this case, I think, first of all, that Ganna and Pogacar left the work on the downhill to Van Aert, you know, and Van Aert was definitely not gonna let him go. So it stayed the same more or less. But then when they get down, if Van Aert keeps pulling, he knows that Ganna is gonna jump from behind him as soon as Van der Poel is in striking distance. And Pogacar also, I mean, they're not gonna just sit there and let them get beat by Van Aert. So, you know, if you are as strong and as fast as Van Aert, it is difficult. It is difficult to be in that situation. And that was, of course, in the advantage of Mathieu van der Poel. I mean, he was not looking back. He has not looked back. I mean, that was, he just got to the bottom, didn't look back once, just went straight to the finish.
And like you said, yes, it's a mental blow, but I mean, let's be honest here. These guys were at the absolute 110% limit. Pogacar was pulling with 2K to go or a K and a half to go, full gas. Ganna was doing everything he could to stand his wheel. We saw Van Aert barely close the gap. He kept it for a couple hundred meters of bike length behind. So for the fact that Vanderpool, he did a full gas sprint like it was a KOM to win the most important Lance's favorite jersey in the world, the mountain jersey, as hard as he possibly could. And he got that 4 seconds. And we know the bike handling skills between Vanderpool and Van Aert are about equal. So the 4 seconds are going to remain the same the whole way down. And then the cooperation at the bottom of the mountain, like you said, they're probably not going to want to just help Van Aert win. They're going to want to make Van Aert do most of the work.
Yeah. But you can actually break this down rider by rider, right? So you've got, well, to your point, Johan, Wout van Aert, says, if we all work together, Ghana's going to jump me. Ghana says, if we all work together, Van Aert's going to win. And Pogačar says, if we all work together, then Van Aert's going to win. Right. They have that. Meanwhile, you have the fourth guy, Matthew Vanderpool, who's out there with like, this is it. Like, it is now time to go.
Yeah.
Now. And so that's just, you know, you're sort of riding with the, you know, the power of two guys at that point when finish line's right there.
I couldn't help, this is on a completely different note. I couldn't help but think about you, Lance, when you rarely see what happens backstage before they walk out to the podium. Yeah. And I thought about you getting crammed into a little love seat with your competitors.
Yeah. Right. And I was watching the, you know, I think there's sort of two sides to the story. And we've seen it a lot with Pogačar when he wins. I mean, these guys on all the different teams and different jerseys, and they're fucking high fiving and hugging him.
Yeah, it's like a mad respect for each other.
I'm like, what is? I mean, did somebody pass around like 100 peace pipes? What is going on? Like, I would have been walking through, elbowing people, spitting, and you saw it with Vanderpool today when he was walking back wherever he was walking to through the finishers. He's getting high fives and hugs and. Good looks and grins from all these guys kicked the shit out of.
It looked like Pogačar just couldn't wait to get up to him and tell him, like, dude, that was effing great.
I know everybody, especially George, often wonders, like, God, which Lance is going to show up today? Is it the nice one? Is it the asshole? I hope this is coming through. I am in a great fucking mood today. I really am. And I hope that comes through to you, especially George. But I got up, you know, hammered the AG1.
AG1. Thank you, AG1. We love you.
Send him more.
Keep it coming.
And I was watching the race and I wanted to get some exercise. I got to go to Las Vegas here in an hour or two for work, believe it or not. So I was like, I'm going to get a little extra. So I get up in the pain cave. I get on the Zwift. And if y'all check my Instagram, you'll see it. I got the race on, I got my Zwift on, I got my AirBot, whatever the things in the ears. And I was so into the race. Like, it felt, it was dope. Like, and I was like, man, I'm having a great fucking day. And I hope it comes through on the show. And I don't know.
Lance, that's actually, I did notice that, that post, that was really cool. You're watching the race. You said you were getting a great workout in, but you were doing 135 watts. What's going on? What's going on with that? You want to go check the post? The man was doing 135 watts.
You know, and I need to speak to the head of HR because I sent her that picture, and she should know, who's also the head of social media. But she's down big time, and it's down in Costa Rica, you know, probably eyeing up some risky shots, tongue out, the whole thing. But she should know to blur that out. And the only thing I can say is, you know, maybe I can't put enough power in while I'm taking the photo, or I could use the excuse that I'm at 8,000 feet, 2,400 meters. But the fact that you zoomed in and saw that, George,
that's twisted. But,
you know, to get all the ammo I can on you. You know,
it doesn't change the fact that I'm having a great day, and I hope it comes through, George.
It has. Johan, I got a question. Give us the winners and losers team wise as we're embarking into the, you know,
great
the
final obviously, last 6 seasons. You know, listen, the big winner is Alpecin. You know, and I include myself numerous times, I've said something's not right with Alpecin. They're off since the beginning of the season. You know, they're behind. Well, today they corrected that. They said, you know, everybody shut up. You know, we're here. Not just Van der Poel. They had Craig Anderson in fifth. They have Philipsen in 15th, who was actually ready there also to make it if a group was going to come back. So those doubts are answered. You know, it was, and you know, if the leader's in great shape, the team transforms, right? And and this is obviously great for their morale. Everything that they didn't do before this race and all the races that the other guys won, you know, in Ruta del Sol, in UAE, doesn't count. This is the real deal, right? So that's the big winner. I think Ineos did a great job, you know, in not having Pidcock at the start, who was going to be their leader. Right,
exactly.
And coming in with a guy like Ghana and being second, Ghana was amazingly strong. He dropped Van Aert from his wheel in the last 200 meters. So he must have been crazy strong.
Right.
And then I think the losers, Soudal Quickstep, I think, their leader was Alaphilippe, ex-winner of this race. He's not in the same shape as usual, but neither was Van der Poel, right? And yes, he did have a crash on the Turchino. But I couldn't see the cohesion in that team. It was strange for me to see that Alaphilippe is on the ground in the Turchino. Then you have Lampard next to him. Doesn't even look. I mean, he knew because he was behind Alaphilippe when he crashed. He also crashes, just stands up and leaves. And then they were not riding together as a team, I think. So I think they're the losers of the... I mean, you cannot say, I mean, listen, Milan-San Remo, there's one winner and the rest is everybody. Basically, everybody's losing, right? But
that's the same for every classic, I have to say.
Do
you think we'll see some of the... Go ahead.
Alpecin is the big winner, and I think Soudal Quickstep is maybe a little bit of disappointment.
Well, that's if you have to imagine Patrick Lefebvre, here's a guy who we know very well who just cannot stand not getting results. But what to your point, Johan, like what would drive him even crazier is that the team looks like they're all sort of out for themselves and not riding as a unit. Mm-hmm. Like if you know him a lot better than me, but not winning is one thing, not riding like the Wolfpack normally rides. Mm-hmm.
Milan-San Remo is a different race than the races that, you know, the cobbled classics. Let's also not forget, you know, to their credit, this is a team that's shifting a little bit towards the team around Evenepoel, right? On Monday, the Tour of Catalonia starts. He already won the Tour of UAE quite dominantly. His last race before the Giro. We will see from Monday on the two big favorites of the Giro, Roglic versus Evenepoel in the Tour of Catalonia. Same like we saw in Paris-Nice, Pogacar versus Vingegaard. So I think we have to also have in mind that they are really focusing on the future of the team and a different kind of team built around Evenepoel.
Well, hang on a second. Then why wouldn't he be in Milan-San Remo? I'm sorry, with all due respect to the Vuelta a Catalunya, I thought it already happened, to be honest. Who cares? I mean,
these guys aren't racing anymore. They're doing altitude camps and then
you mean who? Just why is, races. You mean why is he not? Who's not in Milan-San Remo? Evenepoel?
Yeah. I mean, he's that group's not four guys. It's five at the end. He's got plenty of HP to be up there. And I don't buy the Catalonia thing.
Oh yeah, yeah. He picked out his races. It's altitude camps and races. No. It has changed. You know, nowadays you don't do Milan-San Remo anymore for training and getting miles.
Yeah, plus it's so dangerous. He doesn't want to risk it.
Fair point. All right. Look, I'm just here to play bass and do some. Y'all know a lot more than me. I want to talk about somebody that got 44th today, right? Because Peter Sagan. This is his final Milan-San Remo. Hard to think or imagine or believe that, knowing him and his career and his style of riding, a guy like him has never won Milan-San Remo. That is really, really hard to believe. Think of Sagan and his peak. You would have thought he had three or four or five Milan-San Remos. So today we saw, I think it's a special shout out. This is going to be a special year for him. Obviously an incredibly popular rider.
Wow. You actually really are in a good mood. I mean, the fact that you're actually doing this as a positive spin on Sagan and saying he's done, he should retire tomorrow. I mean, thank you, AG1. We got a whole new Lance going on.
And Swift, I love this. And everybody this is else.
Awesome. Let's go.
And maybe a little bit of HVMN in there too.
Yeah, that's right.
You know it.
And y'all keep it coming. We love you guys. We need you.
No, but Sagan, I mean, Sagan got two times second in Milan-San Remo.
Doesn't matter.
1 year, I mean, there was this 1 year where he was sprinting against Alaphilippe and Kwiatkowski. And I mean, he could not lose that sprint and he did. He still lost it. It is really, you know, it is the race that he should have won.
Well,
And he never managed to win it. It's true.
And if you believe what they said on GCN, he was quoted as saying, "If I win Milan-San Remo Saturday, I will retire Sunday." I think that's
he's not retiring. He's not retiring tomorrow.
No, because he got 44th. Hey, Spud, also, you know, I got to say, I never really got along with this guy either, but Robbie McEwen is damn good on GCN.
He is amazing.
I mean, if y'all want to watch, like, we are not watching NBC during the tour. I fucking promise you that. We are watching GCN with the VPN or whatever JB and Colton got to do to figure it out. He's really, really good.
Very good. He's very good.
Yeah.
In my opinion, of all the guys,
option, hell no.
Of all the guys that I've heard, he's the best right now. He's the most analytical and speaks from experience and speaks very understandable to even non-specialists. Yeah, I like
it. And for anybody that ever has to do it, you know, it is a hard job. Like, imagine just talking for hours, and he fills the time. I mean, it's. Man,
Johan and I talked about that. For some reason, I was my feed watching like Torino had no audio at all, and I would talk for 4 hours on the radio in my career for 30 years. I was watching that, going, I just would not be able to do. There's no way.
Yeah, and he's waking up in the middle of the night in Australia and doing it. So imagine that.
I was curious if he flew over for the big ones, but
not for Torino. But yeah, I think he flies over for the tour, but I'm not. But yeah, he was in London for the tour.
By the way, George, that was also another very nice thing I just said. You did not acknowledge. I mean,
I missed it.
Talking about McEwen.
Got it.
Okay. Anything else?
Which one of you is talking to Cavendish as of late?
We shoot messages once in a while. He's looking okay until the Capo Berta, then he just the legs ran out. I think he was a little bit sick after Torino or during Torino.
Obviously he's going to be a big topic of a conversation leading up to the tour for us, and that especially during the tour. But as an older cyclist, he's older than most of the people in the peloton. Do you have to really pick your targets more properly and work up to it, where the younger guys can stay on top form more easily?
Seems so. I mean, San Remo is a whole different animal. 300K. He won it in 2009. I was there with him. It was really awesome, incredible day. And I know that he's got a great love for the country of Italy, had a place there for a while and loves winning in Italy. So I'm sure that he was disappointed with his ride today, but can never count him out.
Yeah, but I think at this point, I think, you know, he's focused on winning stages in stage races. So I think, you know, he knows very well that he doesn't have the victory of Milan San Remo anymore in his legs.
He's focused on winning one stage.
Right.
Right. Just to go back to the winners and losers thing, because I screenshotted this when I was watching the coverage, and they had, after they were all high-fiving and hugging each other, then they showed sort of what looked like the backstage area. And they had the podium. So you had Ghana, Vanderpool, and Wout van Aert. And not that you can call, or not that we would call Wout van Aert's performance a losing performance, but I just want to pull up the picture, because if you, and you'd have to be watching the show on YouTube, look at that picture. Okay. So here's Ghana just being super generous, arm around Vanderpool. Look at Wout van Aert. Believe me, if you asked him winners and losers, I can promise you what his answer is. Look at him. He is like, get me the fuck out of here. By the way, you know, Ghana probably could have done both these guys a favor, since they don't swap Christmas gifts, and sat in the middle. but look at, I mean, Wout van Aert just looks completely despondent.
But also RCS could have done a better job with, you know, comfortable.
I was going to say, if that was Lance in that situation, he'd be like, I'm not sitting on that fucking couch. Give me
that's
my
what
couch.
I was. That's exactly what I was referencing earlier. When I was like, Lance crammed into a little love seat with his competitors. Yeah, I just can't imagine.
Me and Contador and Mayo. Can you imagine?
No,
I wouldn't. I wouldn't be looking out that window. I'd be jumping out of it. Anyways. Okay, so we're back Tour Flanders here in a couple of weeks.
Tour Flanders. Yeah. George
will be on site, and Johan.
Yeah, and by the way, Lance, you don't know this yet, but we booted you off that podcast. You're not taking part of it.
You're not taking part of it
because we're because George and I are doing it on site, and we'll have a special guest, and otherwise we would have to video you in. I mean, you can join if you want, no. But I was
going to go back to the bad mood, Lance. Now
I was having a really good day, and just so you know, I'm dead serious. Just so you know, it just got better. Okay, because as I said a second ago, I'm going to be down in the Bahamas with the family for spring break. The last thing that I'm going to want to do is go watch 200 skinny guys ride around on cobblestones when you guys are on site, and my options are rip on the beach with my kids, day drink, or play golf. You know what, guys? Knock yourselves out. We fixed that for you.
So you're welcome.
And let's not forget about Wednesday night. We're having happy hour for our guests. If you guys have any questions for like everything that's gone up until now during the season.
Yeah.
Get them ready.
Whatever. It's an AMA. Ask me anything. Yeah. Or ask us anything.
Yeah.
So, and you guys mentioned earlier that the, going with George and Johan to Flanders sold out, our VIP experience sold out in an instant. So you probably want to keep an eye on your socials if that's the kind of thing that interests you, because there's more coming.
Yeah.
And you got to pounce on it. Like start talking to your boss if you're going to take time off, if your family, if you're going to leave and go do this, like set the groundwork, because if you want to do this, you got to pounce on it.
Cool. All right. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. I was going to say, I'll see you in a couple of weeks. Guess not. Wait, who's the special? Wait a second. Hang on a second. I just want to be clear about this. Who's the special guest?
We're not going to announce it yet. We'll see. We'll see. We'll have somebody there.
So even to me, I don't get to know.
Well, we can say it offline.
No, you know what? So when do I get to come back? I come back for Paris-Roubaix.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool. I want to do the Tour of Catalonia podcast. Like,
what was you going to mention?
We're doing the Tour of Catalonia.
Johan and Spencer and I are going to cover the Saxobank Classic, Gent-Wevelgem, and Catalonia coming up.
So cool. If you want to join for that, Lance, you're welcome. You're welcome to join.
What were you going to say, JB?
We're covering those races as well with Johan and Spencer.
Okay, great. Cool. All right, everybody. This has been fun. That was a hell of a bike race today. Damn.
The kids. 62 years later than Raymond Poulidor, his granddad, won Milan-San Remo. How cool is that? I mean, that's actually so cool.
It is cool. How many years since it? 40 plus years since the last Dutch winner. So there's a lot of history.
1985, Henny Kuiper.
Wow. Okay. All right. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Well, these guys will see you in 2 weeks, and I'll see you in 3 weeks.
Okay, bye.
Bye.